Hello, and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear us at accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com, or for upcoming programs, you can friend this program on Facebook. Today's program is about October 7th, 2001. That was the date the Afghanistan War started. This program includes Ray McGovern and Professor Jonathan Stevenson talk to Peter B. Collins. They talk about Afghanistan and General David Petraeus. Retired CIA analyst Ray McGovern offers his views, and Jonathan Stevenson asks, has the president lost control of his generals? McGovern served 27 years in Army intelligence and at the CIA. Professor Stevenson teaches strategic studies at the Naval War College and has a background as a journalist. He notes that the generals are becoming bolder in overstepping their roles and that presidents are becoming more passive to this kind of behavior. They talk about Iraq, Afghanistan, Egypt, Libya, Bahrain, and Syria.
Now, Ray, David Petraeus is not the first general to report to duty as the leader of the Central Intelligence Agency. But I'm very uncomfortable with this swap of a soldier for a spook and a spook for a director of the Pentagon, the head of the War Department. And I think it sends a terrible message that our intelligence and military operations are deeply intertwined at all levels, and that the heads of these agencies are therefore interchangeable. And I'm just curious your reaction to that, and then I'd like you to address what kind of a welcome Petraeus will get from the lifers, the people who are the long-term dedicated employees of the CIA.
Yeah, well, those are really interesting questions. The first one has to do with managing things. The intelligence community, with double the budget that it had before 9/11, double, and the Defense Department, which is not cutting back. This is a mythology that they're reducing their expenses. They need good, principled people with integrity managing them, okay? People who are more interested in the country than themselves or a particular party. Now, Panetta is the quintessential bureaucrat. When he was up for confirmation as head of the CIA, he described himself. He says, quote, "I'm a creature of Congress," end quote. Okay. So his role at the CIA was simply to interface with Congress, smooth over edges. After all, you need somebody really adept to smooth over torture, kidnapping, putting people in black holes without telling their wives, their families, much less the Red Cross, and then destroying the evidence. I mean, you need a really accomplished insider to do that.
And don't forget the drone attacks. Those are primarily controlled by the agency.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, here's a guy who was able to do that with Congress, and now they're depending on him to do the same with the Defense Department, which, of course, spends X times as much money as the intelligence community. So Panetta has been an incredible disappointment to me. You know, before he took charge of the CIA, he had written an article that said the torture is beyond the pale. We should never be involved in that. As soon as he gets into CIA, he reverses tune completely. So,
well, and Ray, you and I have spoken before about the very chilling exchange between him and Senator Kit Bond in his confirmation hearing, where Bond just excoriated Panetta for having opposed torture and rendition.
Mm-hmm.
And Bond basically said, you know, what are you basing that on? And Panetta said, well, public media reports. Everybody knows about this. And Bond basically made him recant.
Yeah.
What he had said.
Yeah.
and Panetta was willing to do so. That sent an even more serious red flag for me.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, Peter B., frankly, I find it, you know, I should be inured to this by now, but I find it extremely, extremely upsetting. You may recall that when Panetta was named, I said, hey, here's a guy like me. He got out of a Jesuit college the same year I did. He was in the Army, same way I was as a young Army officer. He has some ethics. He even says he doesn't like torture. This is going to be great. He's going to go in there and clean house. What did he do? He comes to Washington. Not only does he not clean house, he lets the same guys who are running the torture, the rendition, and everything else, lets them stay in and run the agency for the next couple years. What does he do? He acts as their lawyer, defending them down on the Hill and everywhere else. So the guy has no sympathy for me. There was a clip played during an interview I did yesterday. Amy Goodman, I think it was, played a clip where Panetta is remonstrating with some interviewing, saying, look, drones? Yes, drones. We're defending the country. And those people that say this is illegal, they don't know what they, all they know is that they should know is we're defending the country. And I'm saying to myself, how does hellfire missiles from drones over Pakistan, how does that translate into defending our country? For God's sake, what it's doing is adding tens of thousands of militants or you know, whatever you want to call insurgents, people who hate us. Why? They hate us for our democracy? No. They hate us because we level their villages. That's why they hate us. So this guy is a... my Irish father, you know, he was very, very... He never used real expletives, but the worst one that came out of his mouth was, he's a fathead. Well, that's what Panetta is, you know? And you can tell all your friends in California that... that's what I think of them. Now, with respect to the lifers at the CIA, well, I think maybe you and I have discussed this before, but people need to know, they really need to know that there are two CIAs, okay? The one that Truman envisaged, the one that he set up, and the one that he praised, and that was the analysis division, which was to have possession of all the information on a given country or issue, you know, unlike Pearl Harbor, where there was no central place for all that stuff, and would be able to speak truth to power. What Truman wanted was to be able to say, hey, Mr. Director, I want you to come over here from Virginia. I want to know what you and those two universities' worth of specialists out there in the woods of Virginia, I want to know what you really think about, for example, about these blue-suited generals that are telling me that if they use this new instrument, it's called a B-52. Now, if they drop bombs from the B-52, they're going to seal off the Ho Chi Minh Trail, Ho Chi Minh's going to give up, so will Jop, and we'll be sitting pretty. What do you guys think of that? Well, I was there, all right? We suppressed a laugh. Why? For two reasons. Number one, Ho Chi Minh Trail didn't look like anything like, you know, the 5 or I-66 or I-95.
Uh-huh.
It was like 180 little things through the jungle, okay? You couldn't even see most of it from the air. And then this business about Ho Chi Minh giving up. Well, I was sitting next to one of the guys from our predecessor of Special Forces, it was called the OSS in those days, who brought Ho Chi Minh literally into Hanoi when the Japs when the Japanese were driven out on their shoulders. He looked at me and he says, oh, yeah, right, Ho Chi Minh is going to give up if we start bombing. Give me a break. Have we learned nothing? So, long story short, we told the president, we waited a decent interval for two days, and then we said, Mr. President, ain't no way, no matter how many bombs you drop or how many fancy planes you fly, ain't going to win this war, okay? Now, the rest of the story, of course, is that LBJ, like George W. Bush, was set on not losing a war, and thereon hangs the tale of what happened after those years. But that's the kind of information, that's the kind of analysis that Truman expected and what he got, okay? Now, what happened with this? Why is it that this other CIA, and there are two, this other one, this operational arm, why is it they get involved in torture, rendition, you know, black prisons, and all that kind of stuff? Well, when the OSS came back from World War II, I mean, these were imaginative, creative guys, gutsy guys, women as well. They came into Washington and said, thanks for all the applause, you still need us. And the question answered itself. The Soviets had already overrun Eastern Europe. The KGB was all over the world. Of course we need you. And then some idiot, Peter B., and I used the word advisedly, some idiot said, hey, we're creating this Central Intelligence Agency for analysis. But it's working with secret stuff. Ah, yeah. Let's fold the OSS, the covert operators, the overthrowers of government, the paymasters of political parties. Let's fold them into this analysis unit. One sentence, Peter B., one sentence in the National Security Act of 1947, quote, justified this, end quote. It said, the Director of Central Intelligence shall perform such other functions and duties related to intelligence that the President of the United States shall from time to time direct, period, end quote. Now, that gives an unscrupulous president, a president with no integrity, a president with no sense of right and wrong, like George W. Bush, that gives that president the idea that he can create his own personal Gestapo, and do not blanch before that word, because that's what happened. All he needs is a willing sycophant like George Tenet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want me to find some torturers? We don't have any torturers on board, but we know, yeah, sure, we can do that. All that's needed is that, and then number two, equally important, a Congress that has no guts, a Congress that will not chance being called soft on terrorism. So you get Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and the con guys from CIA and Langley come down and say, well, now we want to tell you about these harsh interrogation techniques. We're going to, oh, that's good. We don't need to know any more than that. Yeah, sure, use them, you know. And then, a year later, it comes out that we're torturing people, and Feinstein and Pelosi say, oh, we never told about that. And the guys from CIA say, well, you know, we have a memo of that conversation June 22nd, 2004, and we wanted to tell you, but the note says here that you didn't want to hear any more. You know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's necessary is an unscrupulous president, an unscrupulous head of intelligence, and a Congress that has no guts, and then you get what you've got, all the abuses of this other CIA. Now, one little caveat here. We do need a clandestine service. But that clandestine service should support the analysis part of the CIA. That's necessary to run spies, to run people who can tell us things we can't ferret out any other way. But if you're going to have people that overthrow governments, if you're going to have people that, you know, do these other things, well, create something else to do that. And that's, you know, that's not my idea. You know whose idea that was? Harry Truman.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up. December 22nd, 1963, an op-ed in the Washington Post, which appeared quite curiously, only in the initial edition, not in the subsequent two editions of the Washington Post, and that was embargoed. Didn't appear in any of the other mainstream media, so-called. December 22nd, 1963, exactly 1 month after John Kennedy was assassinated, and we know from Truman's own notes in Independence, Missouri, that there was a causal connection between that assassination and his op-ed.
Now, Ray, as Petraeus takes over at CIA, he comes with considerable baggage, in my view. He is invested in the surge in Iraq and a successful ending to our involvement there, however that is defined. And he is also heavily invested in the success of what he has initiated in Afghanistan. And you raised the point in your essay at Consortium News that he is not going to be open, most likely, and the people in the analysis branch there at the CIA are going to be guarded about presenting information to him that contradicts the legacies that he is so busy working on.
Well, that's correct. I mean, picture yourself as the analyst on Afghanistan, okay? And you've been there, you've looked at it, you've analyzed the heck out of it, and you realize that this is a fool's errand. You realize that nobody is going to, quote, prevail from the outside, end quote, in Afghanistan. And you've been writing. As to their credit, the analysts have been writing that this is the case. I cite two estimates. One, a national intelligence estimate prepared and delivered late last year on Afghanistan. And that one said, ain't no way, I'll use the vernacular here, okay, ain't no way you're going to win, you're going to prevail in any real sense if you can't persuade the Pakistanis to change their strategic outlook and seal the border so the insurgents can't get into Afghanistan, okay? That was the one on Afghanistan. Now, there was a companion estimate, a national intelligence estimate. That's the supreme genre of analytic work. Another one on Pakistan. And again, to use the vernacular, that one said, ain't no chance or ain't even a snowball's chance in hell that you're going to be able to change the strategic outlook of the Pakistani leaders. They don't like India. They fear India for what they consider to be very good reasons. And their whole outlook is shaped by that attitude. And you're not going to be able to persuade them, no matter how eloquently you try, and I don't know how many times you send Hillary Clinton and the others there, like Mike Mullen, you're not going to be able to persuade them that they should have the same attitude you do, to consider the Indians very nice people, after all, and the real problem being insurgents, terrorists, okay? That's not going to work, because the objectives of Pakistan and Afghanistan are pure and simple to deny Afghanistan from becoming under primary Indian influence as it had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that the Pakistanis are going to stop supporting the Taliban toward that end. They need to have a lot of influence in Afghanistan. And, you know, they are not only equipping, paying, leading, but they're actually running some of the assassination squads against not only Afghan officials, but against their own troops. So it's a heck of a situation. You know, Mike Mullen, Admiral Mullen, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, he was there this past week. He was tearing out his hair. I don't understand. General Kiani, he doesn't see things. He doesn't see it the way we do, you know. Well, that's hubris. That's just, that comes from this inbred atmosphere that we know what's right for everybody. And surely, surely, they will start loving the Indians and hating the terrorists, and then everything's going to be all right. So, sorry to be so long-winded here, but, okay, here's an analyst that knows all that, right, Peter B.?
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to write a nice little memo of five pages and tell the director of the CIA, General Petraeus, that this is the case, and if he didn't know this before, well, maybe that's his saving grace, but if he did know this and advocated surges and all this other stuff, you know, he's a pretty dumb guy. Now, how long is that analyst going to last as the analyst on Afghanistan? Well, one can say, well, maybe Petraeus has more integrity than we give him credit for, and he welcomed that kind of thing. But I wouldn't want to make any bets on that. And that is very, very dangerous, because if you get the intelligence people seconding what the military people are saying about little progress here, some, you know, it's not reversible, it's not irreversible, and it's tentative, but you know, if you get them saying that, well, then Obama will be able to palliate or sort of tamp down the criticism, and he thinks win the next election. But you know what? Remember where you heard it first. It's going to redound to his, not to his benefit, but to his disgrace. And by the time he's running in another year or so, people are going to see through all this. And, God, I fear for what will happen, because as bad as Obama has been, as spineless and as willing to cave in to people like Petraeus, you know, what's the alternative?
Ray, I really appreciate your honest commentary on this fascinating history and context that's unavailable for many Americans in the media. And I just thank you for stepping forward. And I hope that you'll be asked to testify at the confirmation hearing of General Petraeus for his new job at the CIA.
Well, I went to Bobby Gates' nomination hearing, but no one asked me to testify, so I'll try to get there. But maybe my Code Pink friends and I can testify in our own way.
All right. Ray McGovern, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Bye now.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Still to come, Will Durst's commentary on the birther madness. Joining me now is Professor Jonathan Stevenson. He teaches strategic studies at the Naval War College in Connecticut. He is a contributor to Harper's Magazine, and he has a fascinating and quite timely piece in the forthcoming, the new issue of Harper's, the May 2011 issue, which is on newsstands now, and it's called Owned by the Army, Has the President Lost Control of His Generals? Professor, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Peter.
Now, you have an interesting background. You are a civilian professor there at the Naval War College. You have a background as a journalist. You spent the 1990s in sub-Saharan Africa and Northern Ireland. And you have two books to your credit. Back in the 90s, you published We Wrecked the Place, Contemplating an End to the Northern Irish Troubles and Losing Mogadishu. And more recently, you wrote Thinking Beyond the Unthinkable, Harnessing Doom from the Cold War to the Age of Terror. And tell us, did you have any inkling of the shuffle that President Obama announced this week, trading Panetta for Gates at the Pentagon and moving Petraeus in to take over for Panetta as the head of the Central Intelligence Agency?
I had heard about it from you know, contacts that I have in government in Washington and actually in a couple of speculative newspaper articles a few weeks ago. So it didn't surprise me that much.
But this piece had to go to bed before that speculation even surfaced, right?
It did, yeah, long before.
Well, then that makes you a visionary.
Oh, thank you.
Now, summarize for our listeners the precis here, because you, in a thoughtful way, point out that General Petraeus has departed from some of the behavioral norms of leading generals, at least in the recent past.
Yeah, I mean, I guess where I'd start in summarizing the article is that, you know, before the Civil War, civil-military relations in the United States were very politicized and sort of shambolic. Civil War was a kind of a watershed, and from there, a quite professional military class did evolve that was relatively unpoliticized and technocratic and waited patiently and prepared for the time of the nation's greatest need. And the officers it produced did duly recognize civilian authority in strategic affairs all the way up through the two world wars. Then you had the one major civilian-military confrontation of national proportions in the 20th century between President Truman and General MacArthur,
right,
over the conduct of the Korean War. And even that, although Truman was unpopular for a while over his dismissal of MacArthur, I think it ultimately served to affirm civilian control. After Truman replaced MacArthur with a very quiet, steady, and very highly competent General Matthew Ridgway.
Mm-hmm. And notably, General Petraeus has very publicly, basically rebuffed the president's narrative that he delivered at your competing war college at West Point on December 1st of 2009. And the president announced this so-called surge in Afghanistan with the immediate caveat that those troops would start coming home in July of this year. It's a very quick uptick of U.S. presence there. At least based on the president's plans in 2009. But shortly thereafter, Petraeus made a number of very public statements that didn't directly contradict the president. He just offered a very different sequence of events and projections.
Yes, yeah, so he essentially, in a number of cases, he just ignored the July 2011 date and chose instead to focus eventually on NATO's date of 2014 for the major pullout, which gave him, obviously would have given him a lot more operational leeway in terms of counterinsurgency, and he did this fairly publicly, and I guess one of the things I would contend is that this really does seem to cut against the sort of accepted theory of civil military relations, which Samuel P. Huntington of Clash of Civilizations fame posited in 1957, which is called the theory of objective control. And it says that there should be military obedience to civilian leaders in areas of strategic or political discretion, which overall strategy would be, and civilian deference to the military on operational and tactical matters. What I'm suggesting is that General Petraeus, you know, in going on TV and sort of challenging or at least questioning or not directly embracing the president's July 2011 drawdown date, was in fact getting into the realm of politics and strategy.
And as you point out, General McChrystal was sacked for his indiscreet remarks that were quoted, some indirectly attributed to him, in the Rolling Stone piece. And you quote in Harper's here the president's statement for firing McChrystal because he undermined the civilian control of the military that is at the core of our democratic system. So McChrystal got fired. Now he's been rehabilitated and been put in charge of a veterans task force. And Petraeus basically thumbed his nose at the example of McChrystal, and he's getting promoted and brought back stateside as a result.
In a way, I think you can look at it in a way that gives President Obama a little bit more credit for, I won't say Machiavellian, but subtle cleverness, and I think you can at least read it as getting Petraeus out of Afghanistan and giving him responsibility for a much wider array of problems at a much broader strategic level that doesn't involve direct command over military assets is a form of kicking him upstairs. And allows Obama to eliminate a fairly big barrier to policy flexibility on Afghanistan without causing a politically damaging rupture of relations between the White House and the Pentagon.
Houston, we have a problem.
More from great speeches and interviews after these messages.